Hey, welcome to The Deadline. I'm Laura, your host and founder of the New Jersey Ghost Hunter Society. Oh, so refreshing to have our sounds back. I gotta get through these upcoming meetings. We don't have any meetings in December, okay? Happy holidays. First meeting up at BAD is January 3rd. It's at the Hazlitt Library. It's our Central Jersey division, headed up by Gregory and Sherry Irish, and that's located at 251 Middle Road in Hazlitt. Again, that's January 3rd. All meetings start at 7 p.m. and end promptly at 8:30 p.m. You do not have to be a member to attend a meeting. Anybody can go to the meeting, okay? They're free and open to the public. Next meeting is January 16th, this is all in 2007, at 293 Main Street. That's the community center located in Hackettstown in the Blue Room. And then that's the Northwest Division that I head up. And then the Northeast Division, headed up by Laura Lindemann, will have their meeting on January 26th at the Bogota Recreation Center, located at 162 West Main Street in Bogota. Okay, now I have to tell you, even though it's a little after the fact, about 2 weeks ago. Oh, and happy Thanksgiving belated, everybody.
Oh, yes.
You know, I know yesterday was Fat Turkey Day.
Well, then today's the perfect day to sit down and just listen to this.
Exactly. This is Black Friday when this uploads, so.
Ugh.
All the shoppers are out there.
Stay home.
I'm going to point and click my way through the shopping list. Sorry. I've already bought a couple things online, and it's great. You just point, click, and it shows up at your door. I'm like, so I would stand in a line, why? You know? I mean, anyway. About 2 weeks ago, by the time this airs, I had the pleasure of getting to see what's going to be the release of the movie, The Haunting of Danbury House.
Very nice.
Yes. They, meaning Carl Petrie and John Arricchio, who are of Gold Castle Films, working together there to produce this project, had me and Peter out to John's house. And, I forget what town it is, but it was way out there. And we went out, and he even has his own, like, theater set up in his one room converted into, like, his own mini theater in the house. And I thought, really, all I was supposed to be there for was, because Carl said, oh, I need to give you, like, some type of interview. You know, like when you see, like when you get a DVD
right,
and there's
right.
The outtakes and interviews from the different characters and stuff. I'm like, yeah, but dude, I only had like one line. You know, who's going to want to hear from me? He's like, oh, no, because of the New Jersey Ghost Hunter Society and everything, it'd be really good. So, and Tony Rugnetta played the interviewer. So it worked well. We got to film this segment of him asking me about haunting and this and that. So that was really cool. And but that was after. Like, I thought that's all I needed to be there for was show up, do the shtick, get out of there.
Okay.
But they treated us like royalty. We show up, and John's wife, oh gosh, I forget her name. I want to say Alice, but I'm not 100% sure. I mean, you walk through the door, the place smelled so good. And she's taking out garlic bread and filling up a basket. I'm like, oh, God, just shoot me. I just had crappy eggs and toast at the diner.
There's always room for garlic bread.
Oh, I couldn't. Plus, I didn't want to. Peter's not a big fan of the whole garlic and onion thing, so I didn't want to, you know.
I repeat, there's always room for garlic bread.
This woman cooked up a storm. She had meatballs and spaghetti and garlic bread, and I'm like, you know me and my Italian food, right? It's like, God, I could eat it for breakfast, lunch, and dinner, and I'm sitting there going, I can't believe I ate that crap at a diner. If I had known, you know.
I would walk in the bathroom and release the food in my stomach.
But, all right, so, but this is how it was. So, we got treated like royalty. She made this gorgeous meal, so I had to just pass that up. And then we got brought into the private screening room and got to see The Haunting of Danbury House. Now, Carl did preface it by telling me this is not the finished product. He said it may seem like it jumps a little bit or that the transitions
right.
aren't that smooth. They still have filler parts and things to put in to really make it transition. But I have to tell you, wow. Wow. I was so impressed. Wow. I can't. I mean, really, it's not even done, and it's this good. And I am saying that in all sincerity because I don't know if it's maybe, like, some of the actors you recognize from some of the other projects
right,
that
right.
they've done. And Peter touched on that. He's like, you know, maybe because now that they've done so many projects together, there's a cohesive quality. They're more comfortable with each other, and there's this flow, and it just kind of comes together. And whatever they did on this film, keep doing it, guys, because it works. I mean, everybody, it just looked more, the quality in the presentation was better, you know, just seeing it. Like, I've noticed some of the older ones that I've watched, or like either through Netflix or whatever, looked more, I don't know what's the word, but just like so videotape, you know?
Okay.
And this looked more like, wow, like on the movie screen, movie quality, film quality.
You know what was missing?
What?
If you could have been there watching that with a nice big plate of Italian food in your lap.
Yeah. I know, and I'm looking at those meatballs, and I'm looking at the sauce, and I'm going, oh, man, just shoot me. But, you know, because, I mean, I won't do all that. I won't go to all that trouble for me. You know, I Barilla, that's it. I crack open a jar of Barilla. There's my sauce. But, you know, you could tell this was the homemade sauce and the meatballs, and I'm like, oh, man.
And you're still kicking yourself.
I am, but, you know, so be it. But anyway, so the movie looks really good. I'm, you know, and they kept saying, oh, where do you see you on camera? Oh, you came out so great. I'm like, there's not much to come out so great. I mean, it's like, I'm gone, you know, which is fine by me because I am by no means an actress. I have absolutely no interest in it, no, never been drawn to it. I suffered through the eighth grade production of Oliver, you know. It's like,
okay, Miss Montel.
Yeah, well, that was okay. That was sitting in the audience. Now, see, if they had said, well, you're going to sit up on stage with Montel, I would have been a wreck. But there was safety in numbers. I mean, sitting in an audience is not frightening, you know?
Probably because they didn't allow you on stage.
No, that was Sylvia's show. And she's like, you know, right-hand man to their... to Montel there. But yeah, so the movie, I think, is going to be really good. So, you know, people, you can check it out. Let's see, it's www.goldcastlefilms.com. And even if you click on the picture that I have on the homepage of me and the cast of people that were there that day when we filmed the coroner segment of the movie, you can click on that. It'll take you right to the Gold Castle Films and the Haunting of Danbury House.
Well, you know what? Maybe they should send us a little clip and we'll play it.
Well, if you go to their site, they have the opening clip thing that, you know, like, what do you call it, like a trailer?
Right.
You can
right.
watch the trailer
okay.
of the movie. You can hear the lava lamp song. And it's, because I'm trying to understand this. I think from what I understand, the star actress in this movie, this really is her band, or maybe she really is musically inclined, and I mean, besides acting, she's in this band, and they make music, and they have this song, the Lava Lamp song. And,
is she hot?
Oh, yeah.
She's single?
Can't answer, I'm not sure.
Oh, I thought you'd be looking out for me.
Well, you know, nowadays, you can't tell. You know, it used to be everybody, if you had an MRS degree, it was like right on your finger and you could tell, you know. I mean, she could very well be unattached, but I wasn't able to ascertain that because, you know, you can't. She was being in actor mode when I saw her. And I know even from doing like Laura Aura and the little bit of modeling I did when I was a kid, you're never, if you're married, to wear your wedding band. Anything that gives away your identity, you can't wear. So even if she is married, she was on a set, she couldn't wear a wedding band because it would give away the person of her when she's supposed to be in character as Aubrey, whatever the hell her name is. Anyway, but yes, she's very attractive. She's got a very good figure. You'll like it. Believe me, when you see her do the song, the Lava Lamp song in the movie, and she's got like this like barely there silver monokini kind of dress outfit on, okay, and it's like covering the bare essentials and everything else is exposed, and she's got the figure for it.
When's the movie coming out?
You're going to the premiere with me, I'm telling you. I think they estimate now in February
Okay. It'll
be out. And that'll be good. It'll be around my birthday, Peter's birthday. We can make it a big birthday and premiere opening bash celebration. And, you know, we'll even spring for the Veuve Clicquot. Screw the Corbel. You know, we'll get the good stuff. But yeah,
ooh,
so anyway,
mimosas.
The song Mimosas, that's what Corbel is relegated to, because it's like a champagne to me now.
Sure, I don't care, but
I can't do them because
the
orange
gives me headaches, though.
Then you haven't had real champagne, dear. That's the golden rule. True champagne will not give you a headache.
I've had Dom and gave me a headache.
Dom is very overrated. Try Veuve Clicquot. That beautiful orange label. It's on sale this week. Well, not by the time the show airs, but the week that I'm recording the show, it's on sale for $35.99 a bottle. Which reminds me, I gotta get over there and get some. That way, I'll put a couple of bottles aside for New Year's. But and Veuve Clicquot, I'm telling you, you pour that in a champagne flute, one flute, and it's like a bullet to the brain. You're just like, yeah. I mean, fried. It's awesome. Love it. And it's always consistent. It's every bottle from the one to the next is perfect, okay? And you won't get a headache. But anyway, enough about champagne. So you've got to check out the movie at goldcastlefilms.com. It's The Haunting of Danbury House, and I can't wait for this to come out and actually see it on the big, big screen, you know.
I wonder where it's going to premiere it at.
Gosh. I don't know. I think that it was like some... I almost want to say William Patterson, but I'm not sure. I think they might have premiered one of their other movies there, and they're hoping that they can work something out, or maybe there's another local theater that will do it. But it should be pretty good. You know, pretty fun to go see and to celebrate. So hi out there to Carl and John, because you guys are doing great work. I was really impressed with this the quality of this picture. And you know me. And well, put it this way. When I'm sitting there in the screening room, I am the only female, okay? And you know what basically, and it's always like there's some gratuitous sex scene in every friggin' movie they've done, right?
No? Really?
Yeah. Yeah, remember how you loved The Ghost of Angela Webb?
Wait, The Ghost of Angela, did I see that?
Yeah. Yeah, you've got like a bronze-plated copy. I have to tell you. I went to my friend Bug's Halloween party because he had it November 4th. And he's like, we start talking, and he goes, oh, you know, I saw you in the paper. He goes, you must be so, like, it doesn't even faze you now because everywhere I look, there you are. And I'm like, well, no. I said, it's still fun. And he goes, and then Peter goes, yeah, she's even going to be in a movie. And he's like, what? Get the hell out of here. And I'm like, yeah. So it was a very small part. I play the corner. And Bug's like, dude, what movie is it? I'm like, The Haunting of Danbury House. He's like, I got to check that out. He goes, wait a minute. And I'm like, yes. It's the same people. It's Carl Petri and, you know, it's the same people that did Ghost of Angela Webb. He's like, oh, I got a copy. Yeah, and John starts laughing because John had bought that film at the New Jersey Ghost Conference 2006 because Carl was there and he thought, oh, okay, you know, John from Spirit Searchers. He said he took it home, he watched it, he's like, oh, God, you know, he saw that. So he goes to Bug, he goes, here, Bug, you're going to like this. And Bug's like, I did. He goes, that's an awesome movie. He goes, so you're going to be in one? He goes, are you doing anything like that? I'm like, no.
It's still in my DVD player.
I know. So, anyway, so I'm sitting there in the screening room. I'm the only female, okay? And I'm thinking, as soon as the one shot, this girl gets in the shower, like the lead actress, the one I was telling you about. And I'm like, here we go. She's going to have, like, either get molested by another female ghost or a guy ghost or the you know, the handyman out in the tool shed's going to come in and be really handy. And I'm just going to be sitting here like, okay, couch, swallow me whole now, because I'm like, oh, God, no. And luckily, it was tasteful. It was just like her taking a shower, shot from the back. You got a little, like, slight breast side view action, and then it went back the way it's supposed to be. I'm like, thank you, God, you know? So, and then even the part where Tony's getting it on with two dead, well, they're ghosts at this point, the two ghosts that come at him, and, you know, poor guy. We were, like, kind of busting on him. Like, you poor man. He had to suffer. He goes, yeah, it took 44 shots to get that scene right. You know, with the two girls doing him up.
Wah, 44 shots.
Poor guy.
Little bitch.
Stop. He's a nice guy. He's really a doll. But, yeah, so, you know. Thankfully, now, Carl... This is it. Dude, you're on to something here. I mean, you don't need all that really graphic porn. You just need the really, like, you can allude to it, you can make the mind wander, and then actually just keep sticking to plan of the ghosts and telling the story, and it works. I mean, it's like, this is going to be the one that can be shown in a theater that, you know, people could go to, because it's like, it almost cheeses it out when you throw in all the extra porn and stuff, right?
Laura's opinions do not necessarily express the opinions of everybody in the room.
That's true. You know, I'm sorry. I'm still a recovering Catholic girl.
Excuse me. I'm windpipe.
Okay. Anyway, let's move along to shout out.
Oh, okay.
Each week, we will give a shout-out to a paranormal investigating group or ghost hunting club. We want to recognize those exceptional organizations out there in the field who are doing the research and sharing their findings via their websites. If you would like your group shouted at, send an email with the link to your site to thedeadline@njghs.net. We'll check out your site, and if you make the grade, we'll email you to let you know which show your shout-out will be aired on. This week's shout-out goes to Cosmic Society of Paranormal Investigations. They're on the web at www.cosmicsociety.com. This is headed up by my buddy, Donna Kent. She leads this group and founded it in 1995. It's 3 years before I founded the NJGHS, so way to go, Donna. She's been on sightings and worked with TAPS for the Ghost Hunters series on Sci-Fi, and she has amazing photos of ghostly anomalies she's captured over the years. So again, a shout-out to Cosmic Society of Paranormal Investigations.
Do you have what it takes to be a ghost hunter? Are you fascinated with the paranormal? Then why not take your interest to the next level and join New Jersey Ghost Hunter Society? For a $20 lifetime membership fee, you'll receive training on our cemetery hunts, get to participate on investigative teams for private investigations, and receive discounts on books we sell. Members also get the reduced rate on special events we offer throughout the year. You can PayPal right from the homepage of www.njghs.net or send your check or money order payable to Ghost Hunters to P.O. Box 8018, Parsippany, New Jersey 07054. Happy haunting.
Hi, this is John Zaffis, author of Shadows of the Dark. Welcome to another evening of Deadline, hosted by New Jersey Ghost Hunters Society. I hope you enjoy the show.
Hey, welcome back to the Deadline. I'm Laura, and I'm here with Brian. It's time for one of our favorite times of the show. You can hear the X-Files playing its Parashare. Thanks to those of you who took the time to write in and share your great ghostly encounters and paranormal experiences, you're now entered in the monthly drawing for membership in the NJGHS, which I really should have done for this show because it's by the time it airs, it's the end of November, and I didn't have a chance tonight to go through because we actually had so many Parashares.
Well, actually, let's do it on the next show.
Yeah, on the next show, it'll be for November, cause, and that'll be airing the first weekend in December, but yeah. We actually had so many Parashares that it was... Normally, there's only, like, maybe one. And I can say, well, you win. But we actually had several. So I have to put... And I'm very honest. I will put each person's name on a piece of paper, fold it up, and I stick it in this little cup I have at work. I shake it up. And I'll pick some colleague of mine to just reach in and pick out the winner. So it is done very legitimately. So we will do that. Anyway, so if you haven't already, please send in your Parashares to thedeadline@njghs.net, okay? And we don't have a Parashare for this show. And you know what? It's totally understandable because this is like airing Thanksgiving week. People are busy getting ready for their turkey dinners, and then they're going to get ready to go shopping and holiday stuff and Black Friday. So, well, totally understandable, people, if you did not have time to email thedeadline@njghs.net with your Parashare. However, one particular NJGHS member and certified paranormal investigator friend of ours, Nathan, took the time to write in through my MySpace page and alert me to the fact that on the show about a couple weeks ago that we talked about the Myrtles Plantation, because right. It was one of our haunted trivia questions about Chloe, the information that I recanted was incorrect. Now, mind you, it was correct in terms of what I had been taught on the tour that I took at the Myrtles Plantation when I stayed there, but apparently that's the very information that the tour guides and everybody keeps promoting and sending out there when it's not the real deal.
Mm-hmm.
So, Nathan said, you know, you might want to check out Troy Taylor's writing on the subject because he's really been very thorough. In fact, it's even covered in Troy's book, so there I was, okay? And I looked up on Troy's site, which is prairieghost.com. And if you go to prairieghost.com/myrtles.html, you will get the entire The Legends, Lore, and Lies of the Myrtles Plantation. And it is one of America's most haunted places, but Troy did a really good job going through all the stuff that people are told to be the hauntings and attractions of Myrtles. And then he went in to tell you exactly what the history is. Now, I can see where it got a little convoluted because Chloe is mentioned. She was one of the slaves that was in the main house. And the master of the house was having his way with her because his wife was pregnant with their third child. And so since the wife was pregnant and couldn't get it on, little old Chloe was serving, fitting the bill there. So Troy goes on to describe all this. So that's where, and what happened was when the master, I think, got tired of Chloe and he moved on to another slave to fill the bill there, Chloe began to get paranoid, thinking she's going to be relegated out to the fields, and that's like the worst thing that can happen. So that's why she was always eavesdropping and was terrified whenever she heard her name, because she thought, this is it, he's going to send me out to the fields. So in any event, yes, you know, she was eavesdropping, but that was the reason why he did catch her, and he did have her left ear cut off, and then she would wear that green scarf thing to kind of hide the scarring. Now, that syncs up, because I can tell you, from having been to the Myrtles, I did talk with women who said they could feel their left ear tugged on if they were wearing an earring. A lot of times women report, like, they take their earrings off, put them on the dresser to go to bed at night, they get up in the morning and one of the earrings is missing, or both of them are missing, because Chloe isn't too happy about seeing people wear earrings because she had her ear cut off. So that kind of makes sense. I think, you know, I don't know if they even mentioned it here, but if I know when I was down at the Myrtles, they talked about how the property itself, to begin with, before this guy even came down there and built the original plantation house, which was nothing to look at, that this was the site of, like, an Indian burial. There was kind of swamps and stuff there. So you already had a lot of, like, negative vibes going on, from what I remember. Now, again, that could be totally bogus, too. That could just be something they told on the tour. So let's see, what else does he go on to spiel about here? And then the whole thing with Chloe baking the cake and putting the oleander in it. They say that it may not have been such an innocent thing on her part. That's still debatable. Even though she maybe was trying to get them sick so she could be back in their good graces nursing them back to health, some people argue that, well, that was the nice way of painting her. The other people say, no, in all reality, she was vengeful. She was pissed that her ear was cut off, and she was out, you know, for blood, ass, and all, as they say. But who knows? But you'd have to check this out, prairieghost.com/myrtles, because it does give you all the history, and Troy goes into great detail. Apparently the cake was baked. It was baked for the oldest daughter's birthday, and the man of the house didn't have any. I'm trying to see where it was. And then the wife actually died of yellow fever, not from the oleander poisoning. And then the one kid died of something else like a year after the wife died, you know, the mother died. And so there's all these things that, you know, let me see if I can find it for sure in here. Let's see. Chloe put a small amount of poison into a birthday cake that was made in honor of the Woodruff's oldest daughter. In with the flour and sugar went a handful of crushed oleander flowers. The two children and Sarah Matilda each had slices of the poison cake, but Woodruff didn't eat any of it. Before the end of the day, all of them were very sick. Chloe patiently attended to their needs, never realizing, even if it was an accident, she had given them too much poison. In a matter of hours, all three of them were dead. I don't know. The other slaves, perhaps afraid that their owner would punish them, dragged Chloe from her room and hanged her from a nearby tree. Her body was later cut down, weighted with rocks, and thrown into the river. Woodruff closed off the children's dining room where the party was held and never allowed it to be used again as long as he lived. Tragically, his life was cut short a few years later by a murderer. To this day, the room where the children were poisoned has never again been used for dining. It is called the game room today. Since her death, the ghost of Chloe has been reported at the Myrtle's plantation and was even accidentally photographed by a past owner. The plantation still sells picture postcards today with the cloudy image of what is purported to be Chloe standing between the two buildings. The former slave is thought to be the most frequently encountered ghost at the Myrtle's. She often has been seen in her green turban, wandering the place at night. Sometimes the cries of little children accompany her appearances, and at other times those who are sleeping are startled awake by her face, peering at them from the side of the bed. That would do me in. So let's see. Now, here's all the errors. I am sure that after reading this story, even the most non-discerning readers have discovered a number of errors and problems with the tale. In fact, there are so many errors that it's difficult to know where to begin. However, to start, it's a shame that the character of Clark Woodruff has been so thoroughly damaged over the years with stories of his adulterous affairs with his slaves and claims that he had the ear cut off of one of his lovers. Sadly, these stories have been accepted as fact, even though no evidence whatsoever exists to say that they are true. In fact, history seems to show that Woodruff was very devoted to his wife, and in fact was so distraught over her death that he never remarried. Before we get to the problem of Chloe's existence, we should also examine the alleged murders of Sarah Matilda and her two daughters. In this case, the legend has twisted the truth so far that it is unrecognizable. Sarah Matilda was not murdered. She died tragically from yellow fever, according to historical record, in 1823. Her children, a son and a daughter, not both daughters, died more than a year after she did. They certainly did not die from the result of a poisoned birthday cake. Also, with this legend, Octavia would not have existed at all. Her mother was supposed to have been pregnant when murdered. But we know she lived with her father, got married, and lived to a ripe old age. In addition, Woodruff was not killed either. He died peacefully at his daughter and son-in-law's plantation in 1851. All these discrepancies. The key to the legend, of course, is Chloe, the murderous slave. The problem with this is that, as far as we can tell, Chloe never existed at all. Not only did she not murder members of the Woodruff family, but it's unlikely that the family ever even had a slave by this name. While living in Louisiana, researcher David Weishart's curiosity about the history and hauntings of the Myrtles was so great that he spent countless hours tracking down information about the plantation. It would be to his disappointment that while looking through the property records of the Woodruff family that he learned that they had not owned a slave, nor was there any record of a slave by the name of Chloe, or even Cleo, as she appears in some versions of the story. So where did such a story get started? In the 1950s, the Myrtles was owned by a wealthy widow, Marjorie Munson, who began to notice that odd things were occurring in the house, according to local stories. Wondering if perhaps the old mansion might be haunted, she asked around, and that's when the legend of Chloe got its start. According to the granddaughter of Harrison and Franny Williams, Lucille Larson, her aunts used to talk about the ghost of an old woman who haunted the Myrtles and who wore a green bonnet. They often laughed about it and became a family story. She was never given a name, and in fact, the ghost with the green bonnet from the story was described as an older woman, never as a young slave who might have been involved in an affair with the owner of the house. Regardless, someone repeated the story of the Williams family ghost to Marjorie Munson, and she soon penned a song about the ghost of the Myrtles, a woman in a green beret. So time wore on, the story morphed and changed. So you can read all about this, but it's pretty cool. I mean, there were murders that did take place there. But really interesting work. There's the mirror. I took a picture of that mirror. You know, I wish I could find the picture, because I took one of it, And at the time, I was with Rob, and we had both gone down there. And I remember looking at it on the screen of my camera when I took the picture, and I thought, oh, okay, Rob's back there. Because I could see him in the reflection of the mirror.
Right, right.
And I'm turning around, I'm looking for him to say, hey, I got your picture, your reflection in the mirror. And as I'm turning around, he could tell I was looking for him. He was standing on the other side of me. He goes, I'm over here. And I turn around, I'm like, well, okay, I wanted to show you this. I said, see your reflection. He's like, how the hell did you get that? He goes, I'm standing over here. I'm like, you mean you haven't moved from this spot? He's like, no, I've been over here the whole time watching you take the pictures. But somehow he got his reflection in the mirror. It was really weird. So check out, you know, really... And thank you to Nathan for bringing this to my attention, that I was only just passing on more of the legends of the Myrtles as told to me by the Myrtles Plantation, and the fact that Troy Taylor, thank you, Troy, for doing all this wonderful research and publishing it for all to see in a book as well as on prairieghost.com/Myrtles. Okay, commercial break.
If you're ready to take your ghost hunting to the next level, you're ready to be a certified paranormal investigator by the New Jersey Ghost Hunters Society. The certification includes 4 hours of hands-on, concentrated training by the NJGHS leaders at the most haunted prison in the United States, Eastern State Penitentiary, located in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. To participate, you must have all of your own equipment. Register online at the NJGHS.net website certification page. Costs are $125 for current members and $145 for non-members of the NJGHS who will receive their membership going forward. PayPal, MasterCard, and Visa are accepted. Upon completion of the course, submission of your report of findings, and achieving a total point score of 80 or better, you will receive your certificate and new certified paranormal investigator card from the NJGHS. All the details are on the certification page of the NJGHS.net website. So what are you waiting for? Take your hobby seriously. Become a certified paranormal investigator.
Hi, I'm Mark Nesbitt, and you're listening to The Deadline, podcast of the New Jersey Ghost Hunter Society.
Welcome back. It's time for Haunted Trivia. Now, last week you were asked, in Waxahachie, Texas, there is a restaurant known not only for its food, but for its resident ghosts. Now, they are Elizabeth, Will, and Caroline. Okay. And we asked you, what's the name of that restaurant? And the answer is the Catfish Plantation Restaurant. Again, that's located in Waxahachie. That's Waxahachie, Texas. The Catfish Plantation Restaurant. Now, this week's Haunted Trivia has a skill level of pretty freaking hard.
Wow, that sounds like it was made up.
No, it's pretty freaking hard, man. Okay. Now, there's this place called the Gargoyle Home. Okay, it's a turn-of-the-century home that was built in 1884. While gargoyles are usually erected to scare off evil spirits, legend has it that the original owner accumulated his wealth through a deal with the devil, and the gargoyles were constructed in honor of the pact. It is said that this house is afflicted by an evil curse. One homeowner who attempted to remove the gargoyles fell to his death on the staircase. A segment on the Travel Channel reported that Kansas City ghost hunters, while visiting the home, picked up the presence of ghosts on their special equipment and reported having felt a presence in the house. This house was placed on the National Register of Historic Places on May 3, 1974. Your question is, who built this house? And I'll give you a hint. To this day, the house bears his name. Okay? So who built the house? Who built the Gargoyle Home in 1884? Be the first person to email the correct answer to hauntedtrivia@njghs, and you'll win a New Jersey Ghost Hunter Society t-shirt. I won't promise that it'll be adult or child, but you will win the t-shirt. Okay. I think that should be good. And again, let me just mention ghostworldconference.com. Just go to the site, check it out.
We don't want to hear all that again.
No. And, yeah, the registration is now $115 per person, and the buddy rate is $85 per person if you're an NJGHS member. You just email me, I'll verify your membership, and send you the link to register for $85 at ghostworldconference.com. Now, also, stay tuned to the NJGHS.net website, because we'll always be uploading some different pictures and postings and all kinds of info. You can join our Yahoo groups, you can get our 5 free ghost hunting lessons right off the page. Everything is there. And, you know, feel free to ever, if you're on MySpace, to stop by myspace.com/NJGHS. And sometimes, you know, I'm not a blogger, you know, in the true sense of the word. I know people are really into their blogs. And I try. I mean, very infrequently, but every so often I'll post a blog and you can see it on the MySpace page. Okay, so that said, please make sure you stay tuned to the website, njghs.net. And let's give a good thanks to Brian Sant, the NJGHS technician and producer of The Deadline.
Hail to the king.
And our team leaders, Gregory and Sherry Irish and Laura Lindemann. And Don Slepian of DonSlepian.com for our wonderful theme song. You know, did we ever name our theme song?
No.
Gosh, we should do that as a contest.
There we go.
Because really, we always say thanks for our theme song. We have our song that plays. You'll notice we had to chop it. When the show opens, it's like it's spliced because we had to cut it down. But people, when you hear it at the end, if you play it all the way through, that's the whole song beginning to end. But we never gave it a name, and it's just like the Deadline theme song. It should have its own name.
Well, think what up.
Well, there you go, people. If you can email Laura H. or Brian at njghs.net and let us know what you think the name of the Deadline theme song should be. I mean, and nothing, you know,
and not the Deadline
theme song. Yeah, I mean, let's come up with a good name for it if you can. And if you do, I'll send you a care package of a t-shirt and a bumper sticker and a CD.
Wow.
Okay. All right. Anyway, you can always check out other music by Don Slepian at donslepian.com. And, of course, thanks to all of you for listening. Keep downloading shows weekly, because at some point in life, you have to meet the deadline.